Welcome to Manager Tools. This is Sarah.
And this is Mark.
Today's cast, Proactive Reporting and the Bricklayer, Part 1 of 2.
This cast answers these questions. How can I keep track of my team's performance? How can I report effectively up to the organization? And how do I balance running my team with communicating upwards?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Hey folks, exciting news. Manager Tools will be in London in late October delivering our public conferences. And this is an optimal time to have us work specifically with your organization, your managers, and professionals. Any of our standard training days is a flat $20,000 since we're already in theater. That is, you'll save on presenters, flight, and hotel costs. So don't miss out on this exclusive pricing and take advantage of Manager Tools European availability mid to late October. Contact Maggie by sending her an email to customerservice@manager-tools.com to book your training. Now, Mark, we're talking today to our manager group of managers, and I think that you don't have to be a manager for very long before you feel torn between running your team and all of the work that you have to do to communicate upward to the remainder of the organization, your boss, et cetera, a status. Always having to get updates from your team to brief or last minute prep for meetings about budget, for instance, is something that many of us go through. And folks, if you're out there and you're hearing about this right now, you are not alone. The solution is creating an architecture of execution, which will help you receive from your team proactive reporting so that every time you need reports for above, it's not a fire drill.
Yeah, exactly. Our outline today has just 2 points, although we will be sharing the story of the bricklayer. I love this story. I listened to a speech actually in Dallas a long time ago from this bricklayer about what he did and how he built his business so successfully. So our first item is the in-between reporting pinch, which you were alluding to, having to get information from your directs, but also reporting above. And then the solution, which is making your team's reporting proactive. And that includes 3 factors, the cadence, the format, and the medium.
Mm-hmm. So let's start with the pinch, the in-between reporting pinch. Now, folks, we've been meaning to get to this guidance for years and regret that it has taken us so long. The thing that caused us to deliver it now, essentially, the impetus for this content coming out today was recently, Mark, you were coaching an executive who is dealing with the pinch and realized that the executive was not getting what he needed from his team, thus causing that feeling of pinch. In fact, we just released, didn't we, an executive tools piece of guidance on a different version of the topic?
Bonus content, yes.
Yeah, about the in-between pinch that executives tend to feel.
Yeah, and we did a podcast, and I alluded to this cast as well, yeah, in our executive tools bonus content.
Nice.
Yeah, and to be fair, this guidance is not just for senior managers or for junior executives, although those are the ones in the middle of the organization who feel it. In fact, some executives feel this as well, because they haven't built the architecture of execution, which has multiple parts. This is just one part of it. But as a manager, you can learn to do this yourself early. So when you become a senior manager or a junior executive or even an executive, this will become the way you do things and you won't feel the pinch nearly as much.
Mm-hmm. Now, folks, many managers struggle with the busyness of their calendars. They have to run their team, and they have to go to all sorts of meetings, and they have to respond to requests for updates from their bosses. And let's face it, if you're in that position, welcome to the rest of us. There is a lot to do. And as always, managers do not get a lot of guidance about how to manage their workload.
Agreed.
I would argue that the only guidance managers routinely get about workload management is their boss saying something like, whatever I want from you right now is a priority, or the, you got to delegate more. I mean, they say things in passing, which I suppose are meant to be small lessons, but.
Yeah. I'll even go further and say those senior managers or directors who are pushing on their directors or their managers went through the exact same thing. In many cases, they didn't have an architecture of execution, this part that we're talking about today. And yet they feel no sadness, no connection to what the managers are going through. And I talked about this to someone recently that it might have been in one of our effective executive conference cohort meetings. Actually, I think it was just this morning, how there is so little appreciation. No, you know what, Sarah? I think it was on our 20th anniversary cast. Somebody asked a question about it. And I said, because there are people getting to the top of the organization, right? There are people at the top. And the vast majority of them do come from inside. We hear lots of stories about, oh, this executive, this person got hired to be CEO and he or she's from outside and so on. But that's quite rare, actually. Like only 6% of CEOs are hired from outside. So there are people at the top. And they just have no empathy for the people at the bottom because what they think is, what they say to themselves is, well, I got through it. And actually, that process of being miserable is actually part of the challenge. And I'm like, yeah, but it's also an incredible drain on your organization's effectiveness and efficiency. Why don't we, when we become senior managers, help our managers do the things we did that obviously got us promoted to senior manager or director or senior director or junior vice president, assistant vice president, whatever. There's just a real lack of, hey, I was there before. I know what you're going through. Here's some stuff I learned. It's this survival of the fittest because managers are underserved and undertrained, as we've said for many times. In fact, I think I mentioned that in our 20th anniversary letter that went out to the entire community. So in this particular case, I was coaching an executive who was running a business and the business was struggling. Now, I was about to say it wasn't his fault. Look, he's responsible. I hate the word fault. Responsibility is much more important. But he took over a business that was essentially struggling. He was a general manager, P&L responsibility. The business had problems when he was asked to take it over. There was a good chance it wouldn't meet his top or bottom line targets for the year that I was coaching him. And the fact is, frontline managers are somewhat shielded from this reality. They don't understand that when you reach the executive level and you start getting P&L responsibility as a general manager, as a VP running a business or so on, that believe it, absolutely believe it. Doesn't matter how charming you are, how good you are, how technical you are, how smart you are, how well connected you are. The number one rule is you have to meet your numbers because all those numbers add up. I tell the story all the time about Walmart, which I happen to love as a company, partially because they employ so many people who are just starting their careers, and the organizations run really, really well. I compare Apple to Walmart often, and Apple has gross margins of like 40%, whereas Walmart has a gross margin of like 4%. And to run a business as big as Walmart with margins that narrow is really, really hard to do for a very long time, as they have. And another thing about Walmart is if every single store loses a little bit of money, there's not some magical financial engineering at the top of the organization that can make Walmart profitable that year. It doesn't work. It's one of the reasons why Walmart store managers are paid so well and incentivized with pay as well for meeting their targets. It's because every single store in the Walmart, the way Walmart is structured, or any retail organization is structured, has to be able to be profitable. Otherwise, the overall organization is not profitable. And if you can understand that, then you understand what every executive and every company in the world feels about his or her P&L responsibility. You have to make the division, the group, the operating company, whatever, profitable. And it's not easy, but most frontline managers and maybe even some senior managers are probably not exposed to that yet. But this person was dealing with that. And again, it doesn't matter how great a person you are. What matters is hitting your numbers. Hit your numbers, life is easy. You're left alone. Miss your numbers or show projections that you might miss your numbers. And suddenly you have lots of, quote, help, unquote. You get questions, you get oversight, you get meetings, you get more meetings, budget meetings, projection meetings, sales meetings, project meetings. actually not help, but it's questions, because the senior people want to know what is going to be your impact on the roll-up of all these P&Ls that add together to make the corporation or the operation profitable so that it can continue to stay in business. So, like it or not, that's the reality. And too many frontline managers are shielded from this, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. And they don't realize that when they get to this level, if they haven't learned the architecture of execution and they start having a bad quarter, they're going to spend so much time reporting and answering questions and so on, they literally won't have time to run the business. And they all complain about it when things are bad. But part of the reason they're complaining about it is because they haven't created this architecture of execution.
Yes, exactly. So folks, in this particular case, again, this executive that Mark was coaching, running a business line that is struggling, this executive then told Mark that he felt like he was spending less time on actually running this struggling business and more time on getting information from people and reporting that information upward to leadership. For the record, for him, running his business meant getting business, like actually out there landing contracts for his workforce, managing high quality standards of the business that his organization had already won and was delivering upon. And so, because part of the role here is go out and earn new business and make sure that that business is delivered to quality, this spending time internally on getting the answers to question after question after question was, oh my gosh, annoying to say the least, because finding all this kind of detailed information takes time away from the ultimate priority, winning new business. In order for him to be educated, if you will, enough to answer all those questions, it takes time away from doing the thing he should be doing, running his business.
Yeah. And look, executives expect you to know your business inside and out, backwards and forwards. They do. And the majority of people in a first-time P&L responsibility don't. And it takes them a while to get their arms around it. And it's hard. You need to be able to talk cogently, specifically, and accurately about every single project. You should be able to say, when they say, hey, looks like you're not going to make this number, what are you going to do to cut here or there, whatever? You should be able to say, well, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this. Frontline managers, when we say that to them, they're like, I don't think I could do that. You're right. You can't. Partially because you're not exposed to this stuff. And we wish more directors and general managers and vice presidents and senior managers would share this kind of stuff so people would start to learn it even when they don't have to do it. So when they have to do it, they'll have been exposed to it and they'll have some sense of the levers they have to pull to make things successful. So before we get to the answer, think about this situation conceptually for a moment. This executive was basically between his leadership and his own organization, his part of the P&L. The leadership was asking him all kinds of questions, really dig into his business, right? Then he was having to turn around and get all that information from his team. So the question we have for you is, can you see both the problem and solution conceptually?
Are you a manager who wants to get better fast? Join Manager Tools in Portland this August for our public 2-day event. You'll learn practical tools that help top managers every day and professionals with their communication. No fluff, no theory, just what works. Thousands of managers around the world have transformed their teams using these tools, and now it's your turn. Register at manager-tools.com/training.
That takes us to the next part then. The solution, making your team's reporting proactive, that is the cadence, format, and medium. So, of course, to your point, Mark, the answer is easy when you see it. The executive in the middle, if you will, has to give their bosses what they need. Everyone gets that. But why shouldn't the exact same principle apply to this executive and their directs? Why should he be always shuttling between corporate and field staff, having to ask questions of the team only just to pass them on to the leadership?
Yeah. And the reason is this exec didn't realize his team's reporting to him was not proactive enough. He hadn't yet figured out that work isn't done until it's reported on being done. We've railed about this for 20 years now, the difference between tasks and deliverables. He hadn't figured out that his organization's job was to proactively give him the information. He should never have to ask for it. They need to give him the information he needed to both manage them and to be able to speak specifically and persuasively about his business to the leadership. This executive was asking and then giving. Actually, he was asked, and then he had to go ask, and then he gave it back to leaders. And that can be solved if you have built an architecture of execution where your people are obligated proactively to report to you on their status, not just to do the work, but to actually report on the status.
Mm-hmm. Which takes us to the story of the bricklayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Now, folks, we have a persuasive true story about a bricklayer that bears repeating in this instance. The bricklayer, or this bricklayer, was the best bricklayer in the city where he had his business. He wasn't a mason, only worked with bricks.
Yeah, no field stone, no flagstone, none of the other stuff that masons do, no internal stuff, just external bricks.
Just laying bricks, exactly. And in this instance, the bricklayer was renowned for speed and quality.
Which often don't go together.
Yes, exactly. You usually get one or the other, not both. But in this case, it's both. He was exceptionally good at his job and his business was booming. Thus, he was in great demand.
Yeah. And as this guy told his story, he worked on jobs he could do himself. Okay. He didn't take big jobs. He had big houses to build and so on, but he worked on stuff he could do himself and he only had one assistant. The only thing this bricklayer did all day was lay bricks, which is exactly what he was paid for, okay? He didn't mix mortar. He's not paid for that. He didn't move bricks. He just laid them quickly and beautifully, thinking of just that one thing. The assistant would mix the mortar and put the bricks exactly where the bricklayer needed them.
Exactly. Now, folks, assistants would come and go, learning how he did it. And then at some point, because they learned the tricks of the trade, if you will, those assistants would move on and start their own bricklaying business. When a new assistant was found and came to the job site, the bricklayer took the time to explain the importance of his job. He told the new assistant that their job was every bit as important as the bricklayer himself. If the assistant didn't fulfill his role was preparing the mortar, putting the bricks where the bricklayer needed them, the bricklayer wouldn't then be able to do his job. And because of this, he paid the assistant very well and was easy to work for those who understood how his high standards made his business so successful.
This was my favorite part. I just love this. It was, and most people think about a bricklayer or some other construction person or a production line person. You know, you got to do the job and you got to do it well. But this, he was quite specific about it. He told the assistant, "You must put the bricks precisely where I want them." And he said this. He says, "Because I'm right-handed with my trowel," he uses right hand for the trowel, for putting out the mortar and putting the brick in place, "I want the bricks right up against my left hip. They must be touching my left hip in two stacks of five bricks, with each stack touching each other. When I get to the ninth brick out of the 10 that are there, five times two, having worked through the stacks, I've been taking from each stack alternately." He started with the outside brick on the top, then the inside brick on the top, then the outside brick on level four, and then the inside brick on four, and so on, right? "You must be ready," he says, "when I get to that ninth brick, having worked through the stacks, you must be ready with that next two stacks of five bricks, total of 10 bricks. When I pick up the 10th brick, the one on the bottom of the stack touching my hip, so there are no more bricks, I want you to put the next stack of 10 bricks, two stacks of five, in exactly the same spot, touching my hip. I'll give you a sign when I'm about to move after taking the 10th brick, but before laying it, so you will know to wait until I shift my location against what I'm building before you place those next two stacks of 5 bricks, again, up against my left hip. All I ask is that I am never without bricks, and when you put them down, they are touching me. I just loved it.
So precise, so specific, so good at setting expectations. Now, the bricklayer in this instance didn't just say the what, but also explained the why he required this of his assistant. He told the assistant, "I need to feel the bricks to know that they are there. That's why they must touch my left hip. If they're always in the exact same spot, I do not have to think about where they are. I can reach for them automatically without taking my mind or eye off of the beautiful, efficient work I am doing of laying the bricks. I do not have to think about anything but laying the bricks beautifully. And this allows me to work much faster than my competition, and yet, at the same time, with more beauty. So, ultimately, I can actually charge less for higher quality work, because it takes me less time to finish a job. And this is why I'm in demand, and why I can pay you so well. I lay bricks. It's what I'm good at, and what customers pay me for. And I've learned that thinking about or doing anything else on the job other than laying bricks beautifully and quickly is wasteful for this business. We can work together, and that's why my standards are so high for you. You will get one warning for not having the right number of bricks in the right arrangement at the right time without distracting me. One warning. That's it. If you fail a second time, I will find a new assistant to replace you. Even with the time it will take me to replace you because of your failure, this way of working is still faster than tolerating anything less than full compliance with the quality I demand of you.
Yeah, again, people just don't think about jobs like this being thought of in this way. The precision, the accuracy, the focus on beauty and on efficiency and speed and what it takes in terms of managing things precisely. And hopefully, the analogy has become plain for everybody. If your job is to run, and I don't really like that word, but we use it a lot, more importantly, to grow your business, there is information you need to do that. The people that work for you know the information you need. We talk about this all the time. How many managers in the world have assigned some task? Maybe they didn't write it down. The director didn't write it down, but it's pretty clear. I need that report, that budget report on Tuesday. Okay. First of all, Tuesday is not a good deadline. It needs to be an hour, like 2 o'clock or 2:15 or whatever.
With a time zone in my experience, sir.
Yeah, in many cases, yeah. Yeah. In the remote world, sure, of course, right? We're working across time zones now. They have information. The manager, if he doesn't get it, if she doesn't get it by Tuesday at 2 o'clock, she has to go look for it. Now, she doesn't know, but now she's spending time trying to find out. On the other hand, the person who's doing the work knows the status inherently. Always the person doing the work knows the status, and the person waiting on the work probably doesn't know it unless you've got some sort of reporting mechanism. And so that's why assigning a deliverable, like send me the budget report by 2 o'clock on Tuesday. That way at 2 o'clock, there's not going to be any question. Either you have it or you don't. And you can probably send a note and say, where's my report at 2:01 if you wanted to. But again, the people that work for you know the information you need. You should not have to ask for it. We've all been annoyed by having to go find something when, in fact, that information exists in the organization, but the person who needs it doesn't have it because, again, poor communication. And again, that's because there is no architecture of execution that the task includes the reporting of its status, at least by its deadline, if not before.
You know, Mark, I would say it goes both ways. In my experience, when we don't set clear deliverables, giving timelines on those tasks, directs are equally annoyed that sure. we keep asking about it. But you said Tuesday. It's only 10 a.m. Like the subjectivity of the deadline harms both parties. Both parties have their time wasted.
Yeah.
Due to that lack of clarity.
Yeah. So again, the people that work for you know the information you need. You shouldn't have to ask for it or go looking for it, especially during a time when the business is struggling and it takes all of your attention and concentration, not on bricks, but on knowing where to spend your time, whether it is fixing problems in production or getting new business, which is always critical, or more likely how to divide your time between those two critical priorities, but not in querying the organization about information that they should be giving you.
Thank you so much, everyone. That's all for this week. Join us again next week as we continue this topic. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to follow, rate, and review our podcast. It keeps more people finding us and the conversation going. Have a good one.